and welcome to the Weekly Rushes, your rushed rush through some of the movie and streaming news of the past week or 4 months, since the writer's strike started and finished, since the actor's strike started and finished. It's been an odd year. There's been a dearth of news, and then suddenly, literally, at the point that the strikes come to an end, it's like, as soon as they all sign their contracts, suddenly stuff can start moving again. We can't really restart the Weekly Rushes without sort of paying a huge amount of attention to the Israel-Palestine crisis and how this is sort of playing out and spilling into the world of Hollywood. I think it's fair to say that Hollywood, in general, is widely considered quite a liberal sort of, you know, left-leaning, perhaps democratic supporting sort of environment and community and business, if you like. You know, it's creatively orientated. Yes, there's the business, but there's also the sort of creatives in there, artists in there, for want of a better expression. And as a consequence, that invariably means they lean to the left. For example, they could have been very, Hollywood could very easily be identified as anti-Trump when Trump was president. And what's happened, it seems, with the Israel-Palestine conflict is it's one of those rare things, though it's possibly one of those rarest of things on the planet, that can divide people so completely. Obviously, when the October the 7th attacks happened, everyone came out in support of Israel, in sympathy for Israel, you know, defending their right to self-defense. That's whilst parking to the side the really thorny subject of what were the conditions in which, you know, October the 7th happened, which is a long, vast historical story, 75 years. But suffice it to say, you'd have to be deaf, dumb and blind and in total denial to not suggest that the October the 7th terrorist attack by Hamas on Israel, it was the litmus paper, if you like, or the catalyst for this current conflagration that has reached such epic proportions. But at the beginning, I think it's fair to say everyone came out in support of Israel. But as time has gone on, and as we've moved away from, if you like, the intensity of October the 7th, though, remember, for all of the families of the hostages, there is no lessening of the intensity. And in fact, today of all days, as some of the hostages are being freed, it's probably a more tense day than, it's probably the most tense day for hostage families as October the 7th was when it all went catastrophically wrong in the first place. But in terms of Hollywood and in terms of what's happening, it seems like and feels like, correct me if I'm wrong, a certain sort of McCarthyism seems to be creeping into things. Because, you know, there'll be those who are incredibly pro-Israel and are justifying, in a sense, whatever Israel does under the cloak of self-defense. And then there are those who are condemning October the 7th, but also condemning Israel's response and the continued mission creep, if you like, that feels like it started to creep into something much more than just self-defense. There's a feeling that the emphasis has shifted away from Israel being on the back foot to very much Gaza specifically, but also the West Bank being on the back foot too. And this has caused fractures, rifts, and disputes within the world of Hollywood. And people are being, you know, I'm slightly concerned that a slightly sort of worrying theme seems to be creeping through. So whilst in the first instance, let's look at some of the stars that obviously came out fully in support of Israel right at the beginning. And as I say, I don't think there's anyone who didn't. Gal Gadot, obviously, Wonder Woman, the actress who played Wonder Woman. I think she served in the Israeli Defense Force, as most Israeli citizens do. She's obviously come out very, very, very much in support of Israel and continuing in support of Israel throughout the continuing sort of, I would call personally, this is personal opinion, sort of atrocities that have continued against the population of Palestine. Madonna came out in support of Israel. Natalie Portman, who's obviously Jewish too, she came out in support. The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, came out in support too, but he also acknowledged right at the beginning there that there were innocents on both sides. Sacha Baron Cohen has recently been in the news, accused of, or perhaps he was just trying to, lobby TikTok and some of the social media platforms, trying to kind of, some are suggesting that he was being sort of supported or paid by the state of Israel. I mean, how will we ever know that? But he's certainly been trying to change the narrative and draw certainly TikTok's attention to the idea that perhaps their algorithm is anti-Semitic. Other accounts, other people would suggest that actually what we're dealing with here is the vast majority of young people specifically just feel more for the awfulness of what's happening in Palestine, whilst also acknowledging the awfulness of what happened on October the 7th, but feel that what's happened since October the 7th kind of eclipses even October the 7th. And I think that's the tricky kind of conundrum that's at the heart of this. But in recent days, the actress Melissa Barrera has obviously hit the headlines. She's been dropped from the Scream franchise. She was in Scream 6, was going to be in Scream 7. Since the beginning of the conflict, Melissa Barrera has been using her social media and posting and reposting updates and reports and footage and clips. She reshared Instagram posts and articles that described the Israeli force as committing a genocide and an ethnic cleansing and referring to Israel as as a colonized land. This is a tricky one because I think one has to understand that the word genocide, which has huge connotations, huge historical connotations, isn't a phrase that is used lightly. I think rather than saying it shouldn't be being applied in this instance because it's disrespectful to the history of what the Jewish culture went through in World War II, maybe what we should be saying is, oh my God, could something actually be happening that's so bad now it can draw parallels with what happened to the Jewish community? Rather than being outraged at the use of the word, maybe we should all be more outraged at even the possibility that we can step close to using the word again. And I think that's what's happening in some areas. For those who feel a huge sort of sympathy for the Palestinian people, there's in reposting or resharing or pushing towards the G word, as it's become known, I don't think this necessarily does mean you're being disrespectful or anti-Semitic or taking a name in vain. I think it's a symptom and a symbol and a sign of just how severe things are. Not how severe your anti-Semitism is, not at all, but how severe things are that one needs to reach towards a word like genocide potentially to invoke some kind of understanding or explanation or description of what we are seeing. So she's reposted those. She was fired by Spyglass, which is the production company that essentially makes the Scream films, and their line on this is, Spyglass's stance is unequivocally clear. We have zero tolerance for anti-Semitism. She hasn't been anti-Semitic. All the incitement of hate in any form. To call something out as a possible genocide isn't to incite hate. It is a reluctant use of a really reluctant word or highly charged word to describe something that's possibly happening. And actually, those who say you can't use it don't know it's not happening. It says the incitement of hate in any form, including false references to genocide. We don't know it's a false reference to genocide. Ethnic cleansing. If you look at the United Nations Charter and all of the illegal, you know, breaking of international laws that the Israeli forces and government have been involved in, when you look at the settlements and what have you, they do unfortunately tick the boxes quite a lot of ethnic cleansing and anything that flagrantly crosses the line into hate speech. Well, that's dependent on your point of view, and that's dependent on your position. If you're in a position where you don't like being told something your nation is doing is wrong, you are possibly going to move that hate speech line a little bit closer to hate speech, when actually it might just be a description of what is actually happening. So Melissa Barrera has been fired. She's been let go. She said, it's important for me to clarify that when I say free Palestine, I do not in any way mean kill all Jews. She said that she wanted freedom and safety for Jews around the world. To have a free Palestine is not to have no Israel. This is a terrible conflation of the two. And I think this goes to the heart of what's quite worrying about these, anyone who sort of expresses support for the Palestinian cause being characterized as somehow a terrorist supporter. There's also the recent case of the agent, Mahar Dakhil, I think that's how you pronounce her name. She caused controversy and was demoted. And there was the threat of firing her too, when she posted something along the lines of, what's more heartbreaking than witnessing genocide? Witnessing the denial that genocide is happening. Again, it's around the invocation of the word genocide. But interestingly, around her story, Tom Cruise, who I believe is one of her clients, he flew in to rescue her from being fully sort of removed from the company. And so I think she's still working as an agent, though I think this is much to the chagrin and disappointment and frustration of many other sort of Israeli Jewish members of staff who work at the agency. So you can see it's a really fractured and a really sort of stressful kind of pressure point that's developed here, where in a sense, if you are to in any way voice support for the Palestinian cause, you can be immediately closed down as Hamas supporters and not wanting Israel to exist and being, and the most egregious of accusations is to be accused of being anti-Semitic, which is just absolutely shocking, because that is a really passive aggressive way of shutting down any ability to be critical, objectively critical of anything that Israel is currently doing. Everyone was objectively critical of what Hamas did. The reason that doesn't feel like it's being talked about as much is because that happened, albeit with the occasional rocket that's still being fired here and there. It was concentrated on a day, and the sort of the self-defense mode, the attack back, has been concentrated over a much broader amount of time. So of course the emphasis has shifted elsewhere. I mean, if Israel had hit hard for 3 or 4 days and then pulled out and then sort of got in a peacekeeping team from the UN, or listened to the UN even, or even acknowledged the UN, then maybe we wouldn't be in this situation where it feels like many people are wanting to batter Israel. It's about, you can't just do whatever you want to do and not have any consequence to it, just like Hamas can't do whatever they want to do and have no consequence. The consequence has been enough. The consequence was enough a long time ago, and something else needs to develop. But people in Hollywood are, this is really causing a sort of them and us scenario, which will be intriguing and interesting in the sort of McCarthyist sort of fashion to see if this has any sort of long-term effect on those who've supported the Palestinian cause or on those who have supported the Israeli cause. You know, which way is it going to flow? I mean, even the Writers Guild of America came under fire more recently in the last couple of weeks for not saying anything about the Palestinian attack, which again is patently ridiculous. I also called out the letter by various actors in the UK who paid no reference to the October the 7th attack. And I said, that's ridiculous. You can't talk about the Palestinian issue right now and not acknowledge October the 7th, regardless even if October the 7th is the, if you like, a consequence of many other things, or not even a consequence, but an eruption that has happened due to a historic problem. But what a vision, what a vision. Hey, Tom Cruise actually swinging into the rescue of his agent and actually wanting to protect her from being fired. Jenna Ortega, who obviously was the star of the recent Scream films, is the star of Wednesday. She's also left the Scream franchise. Now, officially, they're saying this is because of her schedule for the Netflix series, but is it? Is it really? You know, I mean, lots of people are connecting the dots and sort of saying, seems a bit weird that Melissa Barrera went and now Jenna Ortega has gone. I think if Jenna Ortega was doing this as a kind of protest vote, I think it would have been much braver and more important in a sense for her to say, no, I'm doing this as an act of camaraderie and support of someone who's actually screaming out for a humanitarian solution to the whole problem. This is the terrible thing. You can't just say that someone is anti-Israel because they don't like what's happening in Palestine. It's just a complete fallacy. And as I say, Susan Sarandon has also been dropped from her talent agency, UTA, I think is it United Artists. She spoke at a pro-Palestinian rally. She drew criticism for saying there are a lot of people afraid of being Jewish at this time and are getting a taste of what it feels like to be a Muslim in this country. Yeah, not great choice of wordage there, I don't think. So in other lighter news, what's some of the casting news? Pedro Pascal is going to be entering the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Has the Marvel Cinematic Universe got any more legs in it? Can it sustain itself? Can it carry on with it? Is it going to survive? Is it relevant after the Marvels, which I thought was just, it was just preposterous. It wasn't even really, really bad. It was just preposterous and chewing gummy and just not, didn't add anything. It wasn't rigorous and there wasn't clever filmmaking. It was just flat and facile. So Pedro Pascal, I ran this past the girls and said, oh, Pedro Pascal's joining the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's got to the point now where the girls who used to be huge Marvel fans said, oh, I don't know if that's a good choice, thinking that he might get tainted by the Marvel connection. Well, he's turning up in a new iteration of the Fantastic Four, He's going to be playing Reed Richards, who's the bendy man, the stretchy man, the man who gets squeezed and stretched and pulled all over the place. He's soon to be seen in Gladiator 2. I do think he's a good get, but I do think for Marvel, what Marvel needs to do is they need to allow directors and on-screen talent, like they did with Robert Downey Jr. and a lot of the original Avengers, to shine in their own ways. I think rather than prescribing them to what's the lore or what's the MCU logic or how this slots into the Phase 86, let them bring some personality and edge to these characters, because I think that's the only way the superhero franchise or area or genre is going to survive, is to go deeply personal and go for sort of interesting interpretations of these mainstream characters. Well, it seems that, like they say, Disney just can't let it go. Let it go. They just can't let it go. Frozen 4 is coming. Oh God, I mean, this is either a sign of there's blood in the man yet, or Disney's in a bit of a kind of panic. Bob Iger has confirmed that, you know, Frozen 4 is coming. I mean, I see this more as a sign of the desperation of Disney at the moment. I think, you know, things aren't working. I think Snow White, the new live action remake, has been pushed way back. We've got accusations of sort of, I don't like the word woke, but I do think there's an aspect of sort of political correctness and inclusivity. Where inclusivity goes wrong is where everyone tiptoes around the content, makes a film that's about almost inclusivity more than it is about the story. I think just keep making the stories you're making and keep being powerful and kind of edgy and original and new and mainstream, but don't sort of make the project accommodate inclusivity. Just let inclusivity happen. It can be done. And I think that was one of the mistakes with the Marvels. I think you felt the hand of, oh, why have we, is this purposefully just all women? But it shouldn't be bad, but it just ended up feeling a bit leaden. And with Frozen 4, you know, again, I just think people have got tired of Disney. I think the old kind of, the rubric, the kind of logic, the kind of package, the kind of process, the formula seems to be creaking at the edges, and I think they're in desperate need of some original ideas rather than Toy Story 4, Frozen 4, live action remakes of live action remakes. We're going to go, as I said before, we're probably going to go back to animated remakes of the live action remakes of animated originals, if you can imagine it. So Frozen 4 could well be coming, and I don't know if that's something to be excited about, but let it blow. We also talked about this on the Popcorn Junkies Instagram account. Lex Luthor, brilliant, you know, again, here, this is, this hopefully James Gunn, who's making Superman Legacy, God, it better be good. This better be good. You know, Superman Legacy, he's making that. It's the big DC film. This is going to be the... is this the rebrand, the birth of the rebrand of the DC Cinematic Universe? I hope so, alongside Joker, Joker 2. Superman Legacy, Nicholas Holt. We all love Nicholas Holt. Who doesn't love Nicholas Holt? He's fantastic. He's been cast as Lex Luthor. Now, of course, my Lex Luthor in my day was Gene Hackman. You know, bald and kind of crabby and kind of frightening, but also quite ordinary too, like a sort of a CEO who's just sort of menacing and lethal and horrible. Jesse Eisenberg, did he become Lex Luthor in a bunch of movies that I wasn't particularly interested in? Man of Steel, all that sort of stuff, was it? Nicholas Holt, I think, is a good get. I think he's good. I mean, we've got David Corenswet, who was recently in Pearl, he's playing Superman. Rachel Brosnahan, who's in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, she's playing Lois Lane. I think this is a good cast. And I think, once again, the thing here, James Gunn has, you know, obviously has proven with Suicide Squad reboot, with Guardians of the Galaxy, with Peacemaker, the series. You know, he's got the gift of the gab in terms of being able to take things kind of, you know, scatological and funny and dark, twisted and grown-up humour. But can he do it with this? I mean, Superman for me feels like a bit of a poison chalice. I don't know. It feels like one of those things that whoever does Superman ends up being sort of cursed by it in some way. Obviously, Henry Cavill has gone on to do things like The Witcher. But this really needs to be different, I think. And I do think, you know, let Nicholas Holt do what he can do with it. I mean, he was a fabulous villain, actually, in the Ned Kelly Gang film in recent years. Brilliantly malevolent and vicious and nasty. So there are layers to him where he can be really nasty. And David Corenswet was brilliantly menacing as well in Pearl. So, you know, this could be good. Again, I think James Gunn, this project, it demands people to sort of regain their trust in the superhero genre, I think. This is big news for some. It's not really big news for me, but it is big news for some. I know it is for you, Nina. You're very excited about this. The new Karate Kid film. Karate Kid. Karate Kid was one of those films in the 80s that just passed me by. There was something about it even then that didn't appeal to me. I mean, I've never been a huge fan of martial arts films. I've also never been a huge fan of Jackie Chan. I'm not a massive action sort of fight stunty sort of person. I like fights and conflicts when they're in epic kind of, like, I don't know, Raiders of the Lost Ark or Star Wars films, or what was the recent film that we saw recently? There was a fantastic fight. Now, oh, The Killer, there's some great sort of hand-to-hand combat in that. It just doesn't do it for me. I know there's been the spin-off Cobra Kai that everyone gets so really, really excited about, and I keep getting that sort of FOMO thing, thinking, oh, what am I missing here? But in essence, I don't know if I'm missing anything that really makes my heart sing. So this is Jackie Chan and Ralph Macchio, who starred in separate Karate Kid films. They're going to unite for a brand new Karate Kid coming from Sony Pictures, and it's going to premiere on December the 13th, 2024. So this is going to be rattled along. Macchio obviously played the original Daniel LaRusso, who was in the original Karate Kid, which started back in 1984. I was 14. I think at the time I just got into the Coen brothers. They just started making films. And for me, the Karate Kid was a bit too... And Jackie Chan, I don't know. I'm not a massive Jackie Chan fan either. I mean, I get it. I get that he does great stunts. I mean, I saw him crying. Was there a film with him crying about some of his old stunts? I mean, sweet, but I don't know. I don't know if you can cry about stunts, can you? So moving over to sort of some news and streaming news. The Penguin, Colin Farrell's The Penguin. First look image, I'm just going to drop it here, published by Empire Magazine. The spin-off crime series that's being directed by Matt Reeves. I think this could be good. I just hope it doesn't fall foul of the whole thing that so many Marvel series fall foul of. Is this going to be the start of sort of, you know, expensive for telly or streaming kind of series, but still not good enough to watch? I mean, that's the problem. I mean, you know, Colin Farrell is great. And he was good. I like the character of the Penguin in the Batman. But, you know, is this essentially just a mobster thing? I want a bit more. See, I don't want smash 'em up and big explosions of planets, but I do want sort of like, I don't know, superhero-y stuff. I want maybe monsters or creatures or people with strange powers, not just Colin Farrell in a fat suit. Do you know what I'm saying? So he looks good, the prosthetics look good, the character looks good. Yeah, I love the Penguin from the original 70s TV series. He gave me the biggest grip. And he'd walk around and he'd waddle about and he'd have his cigarette on a long kind of cigarette holder. Give me all that sort of stuff. Yeah, give me something a bit quicker. And you know what? I wish David Lynch had made a film in which Dean Stockwell played the Penguin. Why can't we make the Penguin a dirty, nasty sort of sex trafficker? Let's give him a really dark job. Let's not make this sort of PC and friendly for 12-year-olds. Let's make it unfriendly for 12-year-olds, and let's make it really dark. Well, who's going to make the first, other than the Joker, really dark sort of Disney sort of or superhero series? Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese are getting together. Oh yeah, they're going to have a drink, they're going to have a coffee, they're going to get together, they're going to punt. No, they're not. They're basically producing potentially a series based on Cape Fear. I don't know if you remember Martin Scorsese's Cape Fear. Fantastic film. Obviously, this is, Cape Fear goes all the way back to 1962 with the J. Lee Thompson film. Which I think the original director on that was going to be Alfred Hitchcock. That starred Gregory Peck, Robert Mitchum. And then, of course, there was the Scorsese film in which Robert De Niro was in there, Nick Nolte, Jessica Lange. I thought that was better than a lot of people made out. I thought that was incredibly kind of creepy, scary, tense film. And so they're getting together to make a potential TV series on this. Again, I don't know if a spin-off works, does it? When you've had a sort of self-contained story or a film, you know, it's based on the original book from 1957 called The Executioners, and, you know, you just wonder, can these things be spun out? Should we necessarily spin them out? So Steven Spielberg, Martin Scorsese, it's been shopped around. There's no talent attached to it yet, but that's a possibility. Are you a fan of Cape Fear? Did you like the Scorsese version, or did you prefer the original version? And Squid Game, The Challenge. This is less a sort of drama or streaming series, but this is the big series, isn't it, on Netflix. This is, have you seen it? Have you watched it? What do you think of it? I really want to get into it. I can't get anyone excited in this house about it, because mainly the reason they say is, well, they don't die. Not that they want them to die, but it's like, I suppose when you do remove the idea that they could die. Well, anyway, so some of the contestants, well, they could have died, because Squid Game, The Challenge, some of the contestants are threatening a lawsuit after claiming they suffered hypothermia and nerve damage whilst filming. Now, I've seen an interview with Stephen Lambert, one of the producers of this, saying, you know, look, we couldn't kill them, obviously, but we needed to make it feel as real as possible. There is a mammoth sort of prize. I think, is it 4 million or something stupid? They do the whole red light, green light things, all that kind of stuff. There's all kinds of, other challenges. Not all of them could be translated. They didn't do the tug of war, I think. I think there's another one where they've done battleships or something like that. Basically, some of the contestants are bringing a case against the opening scene or the opening challenge called Red Light, Green Light, saying contestants thought they were taking part in something fun and those injured did not expect to suffer as they did, says a letter from the CEO of Express Solicitors. Now they've been left with injuries after spending time being stuck in painful stress positions in cold temperatures. A spokesman for Squid Game, The Challenge, said no lawsuit has been filed formally by any of the contestants. We take the welfare of all our contestants seriously. So maybe this is a threat, and maybe there's the hope that they'll just be paid off or something. I mean, I think if you take part in something like Squid Game, and part of the shtick is this is going to be as like Squid Game as possible, but we're not going to kill you. I think if you come out not dead, I think you should be like, oh wow, that's okay. But I think obviously it was tough. I think, could this also possibly be a bit of press? Maybe the show isn't doing as well as they want it to, and they want people to think that people could have died. Maybe. Could this be a story spun out by Netflix? I don't know. Which brings us to films of the week, and the biggest film this week, big news this week, is Napoleon, Ridley Scott's Napoleon, starring Vanessa Kirby and Joaquin Phoenix. Napoleon, epic. It's about 3 hours. Ridley Scott has told all the French kind of critics and historians who've said, this is not what Napoleon was like. He's told them all to fuck off. He's basically said, well, the French don't even like themselves. Anyway, it's kind of doing all right at the box office, I think, in France. Anyway, I think so. Historical accuracy may be out the window. For me, I'm going to see this to see Phoenix just simmer. But apparently it's really odd because all of the soldiers have American accents. The set pieces will be amazing. I want to go and see it with ads, but I think she's going to be bored. It's an hour and a half, it's 2.5 hours. And apparently on Apple, once it's done its theatrical run, there's going to be an extra 110 minutes added to it. It's a bit like Killers of the Flower Moon. These are becoming sort of 4-part series, all stitched together and turned into one giant epic movie. Is that what we want from our movies? I don't know. So I'm hoping to get something layered, nuanced and detailed for Napoleon. I'm going to be honest. I just fancy the pants off Vanessa Kirby, so I'm going to be enjoying looking at her. Apparently, lots of historical inaccuracies. Napoleon wasn't there when such and such person's head was lopped off. But to be honest with you, I don't know really much about Napoleon. I don't really know the backstory. Some say he came from nothing. I think this film suggests he came from a sort of poor origin, but in fact, he didn't. Some says he was aristocratic, which seems kind of important, maybe significant. So I think even Joaquin Phoenix has said in interviews, this is go and see this film for Ridley Scott's take on Napoleon. If you want to know the history, go and read the history books. Which is a bit annoying, because I kind of want to believe what I'm seeing. But anyway, Napoleon, that's the big release this week. Share your thoughts on some of the stories that we've talked about today, and I hope you have a fabulous film-going, streaming weekend of joy.